Hello and welcome to this episode of the Danny Trejo Tatooine Wildlife Adventure. Welcome to this episode of the Fett and the Furious. This is Star Wars Universe Podcast, and today we are talking about Danny Trejo and motorcycle and car races on the TV show The Book of Boba Fett, Season 1, Episode 3. All that and more with both Ashley Coffin and Paul Hoppe after a commercial break that the Pikes may have control over. Welcome back, folks. I'm your host, Matthew. Paul, Ashley, bright day in the morning. Danny Trejo's in Star Wars.
I know.
We got to start there. Danny Trejo's in Star Wars.
It was inevitable. I figured his buddies, Robert Rodriguez's buddies, would show up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, where there is Robert Rodriguez, there is Danny Trejo.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm surprised Selma hasn't popped up yet, but right. She's above.
Wait, you know, for it.
Yeah, I'm gonna check the credits at the end to see if Tito and the Tarantulas do any of the music at any point.
Oh, right. But...
I hope so.
So, what did y'all think of this episode?
I had a lot of fun. I thought it was fun.
I did as well. It paid off on some things that I thought was kind of where it was gonna go that we can get mm-hmm. into later. But mostly just like I'm here for the Trejo of it all. And yeah. Like, you know, I didn't know that I needed to hear him say Rancor and emotionally complex creatures, but it made my day.
It really did. I woke up and like when I was still half awake, I checked my Twitter and saw, Paul, that you had tweeted something about that. And I was just like, oh, yeah, what a funny joke. Since it's Rodriguez making this show, wouldn't it be funny if Trejo was actually in it?
Right.
And so it kind of was the perfect, like, non-spoiler in that it just sort of primed me that when Trejo did show up, I was just like, this is so good.
I'm glad because I was like, well, this is definitely kind of spoilery, not like a major plot point, but I need to talk about it.
You have to say it.
It's like 1 in the morning.
Yeah. I never
Twitter. Don't go on Twitter.
And I saw that and I was like, oh, Danny Trejo. And I ruined it for Ken immediately.
But he doesn't different care. Things are, you know, feel spoilery to different people. And I think in the future I'll try and do some kind of like dot, dot, dot to make some space for, mm-hmm. you know, spoilers for blah, blah, blah.
Nesting. But
like, if you don't say something is spoiler, somebody might not think it's necessarily true. So,
There you go. Half awake. You send it early in the morning. Here's my kind of take where I am with Boba Fett. Because I feel like if I was wanting serious Star Wars content that was building the universe and was like telling a like Mando level story, I might be starting to get disappointed because this episode kind of felt like, and maybe it's going to go back a little bit in later ones, this episode especially felt like this is now less a Star Wars show and more Robert Rodriguez doing his version of a Star Wars spoof. But it's so much fun that I kind of don't care. And given the history of Boba Fett as this like starting as a cartoon from the worst Star Wars product that's ever been created and then becoming a huge sensation because of three lines in a movie, it's kind of fitting. Like, if we're going to get a Book of Boba Fett show, this is what it is. Like, there's so much that I'm loving that I kind of don't care that it's just becoming so ridiculous as to not make any sense anymore.
I kind of didn't expect it to be anything more than this. Mm-hmm. Like, this was like a gift. And they got a really fun director to do it. And I think I'm just really appreciating, like, they're like, let's build this backstory. We're going to jump around a little bit, but it's not going to be crazy. It's not like Witcher level. And I don't know. I think this is what I expected from it, which I don't usually do with TV shows at all. And I'm complacent. I'm happy.
Like, I had no expectations for this show, except that it was clearly going to have great action because of, you know, the people assembled to make it. But I actually feel like it's very Star Wars in a lot of ways in terms of like we get to see a lot about Tusken culture. We get to see like we get to actually be on a planet for a while and see different things happening on that planet, you know. And at the same time, like there is a you know, a cyberpunk to it as well, you know, the like cyberpunk
banker.
Yeah, exactly. And someone's like, I don't watch Star Wars for cyberpunk. It's like, well, on the other hand, though, it's like, well, other hand, like there have always been, you know, mechanical replacements for body parts in Star Wars. And here it's elective, you know, but it's like, it makes sense. It's like, yeah, you know, there's no reason that you wouldn't have kind of some of that element, you know, particularly if you're talking about cyberpunk in kind of more of the scum and villainy area, you know, just in terms of like that aesthetic and, you know, the sort of rebelling against not even the rebellion, or, you know, not even against the Empire, but just sort of against everything and just being like, yeah, we're going to do what we want because we don't like the price of water. And, you know, I don't know. I'm enjoying it a lot. I didn't expect to not enjoy it, but I was just kind of like, all right, we'll see what it is. There's going to be great action. We'll see what else happens. But yeah, overall, it's done a lot of things and kind of filled out the world in a way that I think is different from how other Star Wars things have gone about doing that. But I don't think is any less effective.
Yeah. No, I love that part. I think it's very street level in that kind of way, in a way that I'm really enjoying. Like, we're getting to see what's happening in a city and getting to learn more about the politics of it and the power structures, which I'm loving. And yeah, I mean, like, the cyberpunk motorcycle gang, it feels like it's out of a different... Like, it doesn't feel like the sort of thing George Lucas would come up with.
Right.
But it does feel like something that would exist in this universe. Right. You know?
Well, I don't get why all the hovercraft looked like cars and motorcycles from the 60s. That was new.
You know?
I don't hate it, though. I really liked it. I like the mayor's guy and his new little cyborg street gang. I was like, okay. I didn't hate it. But I don't understand why, but why would those look like that? It was like, oh, we're in Cuba. Yeah. Okay, cool.
And I will say, you know, one of the things that I think Paul and I talked about, and actually I think you may have been a part of these conversations as well, with Mandalorian is Mandalorian was giving us a great story, and it was tying it into the larger Star Wars narrative because of Grogu and, like, the story of the Force and all that. And I think we all said at one point or another that, like, that was really good, but we kind of would like to see them go one step further and just tell it as a story where no one was Force-sensitive and where it really had no connection to anything else. And I'm sure some connection might come at a later point, but the fact that we're three episodes in and no one has used the Force in any way, shape, or form, I love that. And that is a complete first, I think, for live action in the Star Wars world.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because Ken turned to me and he was like, they're lucky that there are no Jedis here. I was like, yeah. He was like, because they'd just be able to stop all this. They're just so powerful. And I was like, they are.
Yeah, and the thing is that it's like they are also, you know, as Ashley, you pointed out in our Mandalorian Season 2 coverage, like, lightsabers look hella cool, but like they don't have to be in every story, right? And Jedi and, you know, Force users, effective Force users, are supposed to be so rare, right? Especially after the fall of the Republic and, you know, thousands of Jedi got murdered. Like, they're supposed to be so rare, having every single story in the universe, in the galaxy, like, told about them, or at least with their participation. Sure, they're incredibly powerful, but if they're so rare, what about everybody else's story, right? And I feel like here we're finally kind of getting that, like, okay, we're really just going to talk about some stuff that's going on that has nothing to do with the Jedi, nothing to do with the Force. Maybe at some point it'll kind of tie in that way, but, like, I'm enjoying for now just, like, seeing people go about doing people things. You know, and I loved Grogu and that whole aspect in Season 2 of Mandalorian and Season 1, right? But, like, it's nice to also have something different. And, like, the galaxy is supposed to be so huge, like, there should be vehicles that look really different from other vehicles, you know? It's like, there's a lot of, like, kind of, a lot of stuff is, like, homogeneous in Star Wars, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there's different types of ships or whatever, but there's, like, a look. And so I think having something that, like, looks like it's, like, way out there, I don't know, I think it's kind of refreshing. And, like, those bright colors they're very Robert Rodriguez, you know.
They really are.
I do have to say the one robot new thing we don't ever need is whatever the heck that spider.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I don't.
I don't know what that was supposed to be, but you never need that. Like, I don't see the point to ever have to create a robot that looks like that. And it didn't serve any purpose. It creeped by, and I was like, well, I wonder what that was. And then we never found out again.
The market on robots that look like, you know, amphibians or squids or bugs, and we don't need any more of that. Let them have that.
No, specifically spiders. Yeah. Like, keep that to yourself.
I will also say, like, even with the street gang stuff, like, it's ridiculous. It's fun. Rodriguez is finding a way to put it in because he wants to put it in, and God bless him. But I also get, like, I mean, this is supposed to be a world that has had a very strict sort of, you know, the Empire and Jabba. And, like, when the power vacuums fall apart, people start doing crazy things. Like, that's often when art, you know, flourishes and stuff like that. So, yeah, like, I can buy it. There's a lot of fun.
It's very bohemian.
It feels actually a little, it ties in to me with, like, Sabine's aesthetic a little bit in Rebels.
Yeah, you know? Like, she very much has a Japanese street art kind of, like, you know, aesthetic to her in the art that she does. And so I kind of like the...
Is that Obi-Wan Kenobi's girlfriend?
No, that's Satine.
Ugh. Sabine, I think, is related to Satine in some way.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're both Mandalorians. They might be more related than that. I don't remember. Even though Lee just watched the entirety of Clone Wars in, like, 2 weeks, I guess. And then Bad Batch, like, the day before yesterday. Like, all of it. And is, like, halfway through Heroes. So, but I haven't watched all of them. So, again, I haven't rewatched all of them. I have watched all of them. But, like, it's a lot of seasons of TV. The animated shows are, like, a big commitment of time. I think they're overall great, but...
As someone who's been covering every single episode for this podcast, yes, they are.
Exactly. I will say, like, having mentioned Rebels, it was... I'm pretty sure those fruits that were rolling around on the ground were Meluron's at the end, right? Which there was a whole episode of Zeb and Ezra, like, trying to find a Meluron. Like, it's like a particular fruit. Anyway, it's like a Star Wars-specific fruit.
Okay.
It looks kind of like dragon fruit. But, like, I don't know. Produce, like, really gets hit hard in action movies and shows.
All just the like, time. What all the poor, like, the money gone. Those poor vendors.
All that food destroyed. Or, you know, maybe they can salvage it. But,
yeah.
Maybe.
A bruised Meluron is still a Meluron.
I did also like getting to learn a little bit more about sort of the economy and the politics of what's going on in this world. And we'll get more into the specifics of that, but I wanted to start by saying, I'm curious how you saw this. When, you know, pretty quickly, I think we realized that the guy who comes to them for help, like, his whole thing about, like, no one respects you and, you know, you need to reestablish order. I was like, okay, so... He's the kind of, like, petite bourgeois who wants to, like, crack down on the poor. Clearly, he's going to become an enemy at some point. But I had this feeling that, like, Boba Fett was going to turn into kind of a Robin Hood figure of, like, I'm here to, like, help the poor oppressed people of Tatooine. Which is a fun story for a lot of characters, but wouldn't feel right for Boba Fett. And so I was kind of, like, nervous about how they were going to resolve it. And so when his solution was... Yeah, he was sort of like mean to the rich guy. I was like, yeah, you got to cut your prices. I'm only giving you 500 credits. But then his solution to the kids was come work for me.
Right.
You know, not like let me help you, but like, all right, you want to work? Cool. You're my gang now.
Right.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, they're old enough to work.
Right.
They're old enough to work.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that actually isn't fitting with Boba Fett would do.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's a problem that you want to see him solve, but you want to see him solve it in a way that makes sense for the character. Not in a way that it's, like, just a totally different character. And it's like, okay, yeah. Yeah, come save my ass from a badass Wookiee. Like.
Yeah. Fox, did you recognize that rich guy? It was Eddie from True Blood and Mike Stapler from Office Space. I love that guy.
He's been, like, that kind of role in so many things, you know? And I thought he was just so perfect for it. And clearly he's not going away yet. He's going to be a fun thing. So let's talk... Let's talk more about the politics that we learned about that are happening in modern day. First of all, I just want to quick do a rundown. We were told that there's three families that have kind of divided things up. And for people who weren't sure who these were, the first is the Trandoshans, who, if you've only seen the movies, if you remember the reptilian bounty hunter in Empire Strikes Back, who kind of growls at Vader, that's a Trandoshan. They're kind of like lizard people. They were also hunting Jedi in the Clone Wars TV show. The second is the Aqualish, who are, basically, if you remember the guy who gets mad at Luke in the bar in Mos Eisley and, you know, Obi-Wan has to cut his arm off, that's Ponda Baba, who is an Aqualish. The kind of weird, that they have, it looks like butt cheeks on their chin that aren't furry and everything else is furry. And then the last is the Clatoonians. I think it's how you pronounce it. And they were the like desert guards on Jabba's sail barges and stuff like that. So we're normally not going to go into that level of detail, but I just thought it was kind of cool. They kind of laid that out with three races that are all kind of playing a part in this.
I'm glad you did, because I kind of glazed over that whole part.
I figured. I did pause it. I did not just go, oh, yeah, okay.
These are the Trandoshans.
But I kind of like that, you know, Ponda Baba's people are getting the Aqualish. We can get a little bit more of them. Mm-hmm. So I like that there's kind of like a number of different levels to what's going on here. What's your kind of take on the different power dynamics we're seeing, especially with the Hutts at the end being like, nope, we're out. We're done.
The Huns don't seem to like, I don't know, I don't trust mm-hmm. them. Sorry, I don't trust them. Like, they're pulling out because they just want to, it's what Fennec said, they just want to see their two enemies take each other out. So, and then as for the politics, like I said, just kind of clouded over, thought about what I was doing tomorrow.
That's right. Not your favorite part.
Yeah, I don't feel like I really know what's going on in that regard. Uh-huh. I don't feel like Boba Fett really knows what's going on in that regard either, so I feel like that's okay. But I did like that they sort of started to kind of be like, well, this is, this is what Jabba was controlling, and now this is what you're controlling, which is less than what Jabba was controlling, blah, blah, blah. You know, Bib Fortuna wasn't able to just take over for Jabba and, you know, run things exactly the same way Jabba did, right? And, you know, I don't trust the Hutts either, but I actually kind of think that they are deliberately, like, I mean, you know, the Rancor could be like a Trojan horse kind of thing, but like, I think they actually were like, oh, well, we tried to kill you and it didn't work well, so here's a gift and peace. We found out, you know, this isn't a place we want to mess around, and keep our Wookiee, our gift to you, like a bonus gift, you know.
Poor Kristana, or whatever.
Yeah.
Kristana.
His name?
Yeah, there were a couple times in the fight where, like, clearly you're rooting against him, but the noise he made is exactly the kind of, like plaintive moan Chewie would make mm-hmm. sometimes. And it just was like, no, don't hurt Chewie. Oh, wait, not Chewie. Okay, different.
No, he doesn't have kind eyes.
No, he doesn't. I would have been very upset if they'd killed him, though, because he's such a badass-looking character. And, I mean, I know he kind of walks off. He's clearly not done.
Oh, yeah. Gonna show up somewhere.
I was hoping he would join up. Like, they just sold, like, they were like, they don't care about you. And, he, you know, that Wookiee was awesome. He had the light up knuckles.
He's got the brass knuckles, basically.
Not brass knuckles.
Again, I guess. The 1950s gangland kind of thing.
I was thinking, like, Batman's always got those things in shows where everybody else is vastly more powerful. It's like, I've got these electric knuckles.
I mean, that whole fight, I was both like, this is an awesome way of reminding us that, like, Wookiees are incredibly badass and hard to take down. Mm-hmm. And also, why does no one have a blaster?
Right, I was like, where is Fennec?
An 8-foot barbarian with 23 strength, maybe don't engage in melee combat. Ranged combat might be the option here.
Yeah, I mean...
I thought that he killed the Gamorrean.
Yeah, I don't think Gamorrean he did that, right? It looks like he did, but...
No, then, when he bit bit the neck, I was like,
he was messed up enough that, Boba says, like, take him to my back to tank.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I was surprised Boba wasn't more, you know, messed up after that sort of spine cracking sound, you know?
He's fresh out of the tank.
I guess it was at full hit points to start that encounter. Mm-hmm. But like, one thing that I will say about blasters in close confines when, you know, but trying to shoot one person in a melee with someone else, like, it's probably actually not a great idea if you don't want to shoot the person that you're trying to help, you know, maybe has some real life parallels, like, you know.
Can't you just switch your blaster to stun?
Oh, yeah, that would probably be a good idea. Yeah, just shoot everybody. Be like, whatever, let's stun. Although, really, I mean, if you stun someone and they fall down, pew, like, pew. They can die. Like, that's the thing. not in a show or a movie, but in real life. Like, they will hit their head, and it can cause a lot of damage.
And not in Star Wars.
No, there's no such thing as traumatic brain injury in any of these shows. We know that.
Yeah, that's not what we're talking about,
Just
Paul.
Stick them in the back to tank.
When Batman smashes that guy's head against the bell and then drops him down the stairwell in Batman 89, totally it's fine.
It'll be fine. Just walk it off.
Sleeping.
Walk it off. Some dirt on it.
He's asleep.
They didn't know about concussions, so it's fine.
He's asleep.
So the thing I think that is off, reading through comments online that sparked the most controversy is the motorcycle speeder chase. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks are really unhappy with it. They think it was boring or just wasn't Star Wars enough. I loved it. It sounds like you all were kind of down for it as well.
I loved it too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally not a huge fan of chase scenes. I think they often get very repetitive. I did feel like there was a fair amount of creativity in how the action was directed there. I don't know. I feel like some people are probably just sore that they're bright colors instead of that, you know, Star Wars off-white that most things in the desert end up becoming.
It has to be right, white exactly. And orange.
And it's like, you know what? Maybe, maybe some other people paint their vehicles a different color. Like, come on. But yeah, I mean, I was fine with that at least. Overall, I enjoyed the aesthetic and the actual action. It was less interesting to me than, you know, the melee, right?
Yeah.
But you know, still good.
Yeah, they should just not try to hold down the Footloose kids. Like, there were kids in Tatooine, these teenagers who just want to have fun, become cyborgs, and paint their bikes. Yeah.
We can have fun with it. And clearly the one woman who they focused on, I think she's going to become, you know, some kind of a main character in some way.
Yeah.
I love her. I liked all the kids, to be honest. Yeah.
They were a lot of fun.
Not at first, but when they came in against Dark Chewy, it was great.
Crunchy, no?
Christmas Chewy, Santa.
Chrysanthemum.
Chrysanthemum. Chrysanthemum.
Chrysanthemum.
I'm going with Crunchy. There's Chewy and there's Crunchy.
We're just gonna call him Flower from now on.
There you go.
His name is Flower.
So clearly something's going on with the mayor. It's you know, we've gone kind of back and forth. Is the mayor behind it? Is the mayor not? I kind of hope they just kind of settle on something. I think it's been a lot of fun.
He said it though, right? That the mayor is working with the Pikes.
Yeah, but he said it.
Are they Pikes? Because that's a direct. Is it
right? Like we know the mayor is probably working with this new syndicate that's in town that the Hutts want nothing to do with. And particularly since we're like dealing more with the Pikes in the, you know, flashbacks, I think we're supposed to think that it's the Pikes as well.
Right.
But we don't know that for sure yet.
Yeah.
The symbol, the backwards J's.
That's a different group. Pikes?
That's the speeder gang, right?
Okay. That's the biker gang.
The Kintan Striders.
Right.
What they were called for. That is the flat out biker gang.
Do you want to get into that now?
Yeah, let's get into because I didn't love the Tuskens being fridged. That was not my favorite part of this episode.
So all of them are dead. Like all of his friends are dead. None of them got away. Because I didn't see Dress One.
Right. Yeah.
The one that wears, you know, that taught him. Right. Like we didn't go to.
I think
over
the
problem
is Mourn. I don't think we saw the kid either, did we?
I don't think specifically. I guess that would be sort of one of my complaints. I don't feel exactly the same way that it sounds like you do about it. But I feel like with the Tuskens, we got to know a lot about the culture. And we got to know some individual Tuskens. But I feel like we didn't get to know them that deeply or at like too much of a character level, you know?
We don't know any of their names.
Right. Which, I mean, you know, maybe that's fine, you know, insofar as like we probably can't pronounce their names, right? Like sometimes that's just a thing. But like, you know, and there was some visual differentiation, right? But you know, it maybe Boba could have had something that he called them and it would be like, is it okay if I call you this or whatever, you know? I do. Maybe they did, but I mean, we didn't. But for the audience to kind of hang on to and kind of see each Tusken or several of the Tuskens more as specific characters, as opposed to, you know, since we don't get to see their faces, right? And They're dressed very similarly. There's some differentiation, but not a huge amount. It does, you know, I do see kind of where you're going with how you feel about how they ended up getting treated. So why don't you talk about that more, and then I have a sort of counter type thing.
Okay.
I'll just take five.
I use the term fridging, which I do think like can be, it's possible that we're using the term a little bit too broadly, and I'll acknowledge that. But I think it's there's a similar thing of last week when Ashley and I were talking, I was saying that like I was a little uncomfortable with Boba so quickly having become the spokesperson for the Tuskens and like telling people what the Tuskens wanted without us ever seeing that the Tuskens saying this is what they wanted. And so I think for them all to have suddenly just been killed off, just to kind of, if it is that they're all killed off just to drive his story further, I feel like that's going to be both wasted potential, which I'm sad about because I think the Tuskens storytelling is so interesting, but also like, there is a clear kind of like colonialist native, you know, story being told there, and not the best way for that story to end. As we talk about it more, and I think you're right that a number of the Tuskens who have become important to Boba were not there. The kid and some of the others, that gives me hope that we're definitely not done with the Tuskens part of the story, in which case I think I'll feel a lot better about it. And certainly by the end, the Danny Trejo and the Fett and the Furious of it all had made me feel so, I was like, okay, fine, we're good. But it was definitely not my favorite moment, and I'm kind of, I want to see how they pay it off, because it feels like it could go really wrong or it could be really good.
Yeah, so I feel what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
I do feel like I don't know where they're going to go with it from here. You know, you could say there's an extent to which to this point, the Tuskens story has been in kind of moving Boba Fett's character forward, or kind of showing us, right, you know, some of the, you know, that they only exist to develop his character. I do think since they've been so prevalent throughout Star Wars for so many years, even just getting this level of development of their culture and of individuals within it, I think is a huge step forward.
I agree with that, yeah.
I heard what you're saying last week about the sort of concerns of this, like, colonial, you know, not white savior, but, like, human savior, right, sort of narrative. I felt like they were definitely aiming to subvert that, and I think they did. And I think the point is, like, Boba Fett gets taken in by them, not, you know, charitably, right? Like, they make him a slave, and then he basically kind of proves himself to them, and then goes through a whole bunch of trials, and they accept him as, to some extent, one of their own, right? And they teach him some things, he teaches them some things. They teach him some things, he teaches them some things. And so it felt like a very real exchange of culture that, to me, especially knowing that a lot of the culture that you know, the storytellers had given to the Tuskens, I believe, was like Maori culture, right? Like the gaffy stick.
I think so. It's certainly a kind of war dance.
And so
I thought like a haka.
Right. And so I,
what for the listeners?
What's right. So mean? So Temuera Morrison, my understanding is Maori, right? Which, or Maori, yeah. I'm not positive.
New Zealand?
Which is like New Zealand. The Aboriginal native people of New
Zealand.
Exactly. Oh, okay.
And so, you know, I think it's always difficult when you're trying to like make up cultural things for fictional cultures. And I think sometimes to some extent borrowing from some real world cultures is almost inevitable. It's not totally inevitable, but like you're always going to have something that bears some resemblance, probably, unless you come up with something like super original. And so having that be, you know, from his culture or the culture of people that he comes from, right? I feel like there was some sort of special meaning there, you know, that, and so it feels a little different, right? Not to mention that, like, you know, the actor's not a white dude. So like the problematic aspects of, you know, white savior stories aren't all present, right?
Right.
But the idea of like Boba Fett then being like, look, I'm going to go and I'm now in this new culture and I'm going to go and I'm going to like wreck shit and like change things and take action on your behalf and draw you into this conflict that like people do that in real life, it often doesn't go well. And so to me, they're basically aiming to subvert that trope by showing kind of what can be wrong with it. Having said that, okay, like,
I can see that.
Is that the best way to do it? I don't know. I thought that it made a point very clearly. I don't know if that's the point everyone's going to get from it. And I really would like to see more Tuskens in the next four episodes. And if we don't, I will definitely be disappointed that if they're just like totally gone from the story. But I don't feel like that whole arc was there just to develop Boba Fett's character. And like that was the only purpose of those characters. I feel like those characters did feel like it. If they didn't feel like deeply developed characters individually, it did feel like a culture that was developed in a way that, like, actually very, not a lot of cultures in Star Wars are even developed that deeply, you know?
That's true.
So personally, it's the sort of thing that could often make me mad, but I actually sort of liked it. Like, I didn't want them to all get killed, but I felt like they were going to, and that was going to make sense, and that was going to sort of justify the point of kind of telling the savior story where it's subverted, and it's like, it's not a savior story. It's a somebody came into a culture that they weren't in before, decided to try and make some big changes, and it was catastrophic.
So that makes a lot of sense to me, because at first, I didn't understand what you meant by subverting it. At first, I thought you meant that there was something about the story that was fundamentally different than the kind of Dances with Wolves, Last Samurai kind of story. And then the way you were talking about it, about, like, they enslave him at first, but then he shows that he's valuable, and he teaches them, and I was like, that's the exact plot of those movies. But now I see what you're saying, is that the point is that, yes, he was in some ways a little bit that kind of figure, and it didn't work out.
Right.
That's an interpretation I really love.
Okay.
So yeah, I think you've now got me sold in seeing it through those eyes.
Nice. I'm used to like making people like things less. So I'm happy to flip that on its head a little bit. Not that that's my goal.
I just wish I could have said it as smart. I was like, I don't know, last week. But it's not for all of those reasons. So now I'm enlightened.
Well, I think, Paul, you're kind of being halfway in between it. Because if I understand, you're kind of agreeing that last week there was the kind of Dances with Wolves idea, but it's just that it's being subverted because of the...
Well, that just shows how good I am at seeing what the directors and the writers are going to do with the story.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, yes. but second of all, like, yeah, I feel like a person going into a culture that they are not previously, that they didn't grow up in, is a complicated thing. And I think a lot of people like to really try and simplify it and being like, no, this is always good, or you can do whatever you want. And then other people are like, no, this is always bad. And like, you know, whatever you do is always going to be bad. And I feel like here it was complicated, and I thought it was really beautiful, but then clearly he did something that really wasn't a good idea and didn't do it with like full buy-in necessarily from all the people. I mean, they were like, okay, yeah, let's do that. But it's like, they had been existing there and surviving, hiding for a long time. And he's like, you shouldn't have to hide. Let's go fight. Oh, you're all dead. Fuck. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And like, yeah, I felt like this is where the story was going to go. So when you were like saying what you were saying about it last week, I was like, let's give it a beat, you know?
Yeah,
and I don't think you were wrong to have that. Like, it's the sort of thing where I feel like it should make us think about things, but like, you know, we're not always going to have like really specific conclusions all the time, you know? Like, shit's complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, just sit there and get like, you lose like five or six of you every time the train goes by. Or we go handle this, and then should have been ready for repercussions.
But,
you know, one way or the other, you're going to lose people.
I think one of the things that we're maybe seeing emerge that both flashback Boba and Boba today have is overconfidence. And, you know, that in both, like, he maybe is getting himself in him and the people who rely on him in over his head. And that maybe part of this is going to be him learning the lesson from what happened to the Tuskens now of like, okay, I can't just think I'm a good warrior. We'll fix this. We'll win the battle.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Or not learning the lesson and having it go poorly. Like, who knows, you know?
Also, just power of Google. You made a reference, Paul, to how the Tuskens were in some ways kind of based on Maori culture. And I made an offhand comment of, oh, so the dance was a haka, because in Maori culture, there's a ceremonial dance called a haka that's often done. And I was kind of thinking it's an offhand thing because of that. It turns out, actually, Morrison, the actor playing Boba Fett, has been very intentional about bringing a lot of the Maori culture into the character and into this world. And I think he did a haka at one point during Mandalorian, but certainly also like the dance that he's doing with the Tuskens is very intentionally meant to be very similar to the haka. Mm, and apparently Ming-Na Wen has talked about like that she's learning it from him and really enjoying learning about.
I got those vibes from the intro and outro music too, because Ken's like, I don't care for the music. I was like, it feels very ceremonial to me. Like, I don't know if that's what it is, but that's what like the music makes me think of.
Yeah, for sure. The music, I mean, I don't know how much the music is specifically influenced. Actually, I feel like I read something about it and I don't remember clearly, but it is like, there's a feel to it, right? That I know what you're talking about. And I really do like that it feels like in line with the Mandalorian music, but distinct. You know, it feels like it is the music from a different story.
Ludwig is like the guy who does the music for Mandalorian is like a prodigy.
Yeah. Very good. I also have to say, kind of pulling it back to the stuff going on in both timelines, but especially in the flashback one, I'm really enjoying the way the Pikes are being portrayed. Because I think often it can feel like, okay, there's multiple crime families, but they all feel the same. The Pikes feel very different, you know, especially in that their attitude here is kind of like, look, we want to do business. We get that there's a protection racket. We're happy paying to a protection racket. You know, Boba Fett killed a bunch of the people. And he's like, cool, we're good. Protection racket. It's going to protection racket. But you got to figure out which one it is because we're not paying both.
Right.
Like, I was like, this is a very reasonable negotiation. I'm kind of with these guys. I like this.
Right. Unless they, like, made a side deal with the speeder gang to go kill the raiders while Boba Fett was coming to visit them. But
also true.
But I mean, they did have a legit point. It's like, what are we going to pay you to protect us from them, and them to protect us from you? Like, with the, you know, come on. Right. Like, once this can be under one person's jurisdiction, and we'll pay you the tariffs, basically, or protection fee, whatever. You know. I actually like the Pikes here. Not like I am sympathetic towards them, really. But you know, I think having seen them in Clone Wars. I'm a little bit surprised that they've translated as well to live action.
Yeah.
And I kind of find them a little more interesting here than they felt a little more cartoon villain in, you know, Clone Wars, which you could say like, well, it's a cartoon, but like that season of Clone Wars is amazing. And like the last four episodes, I think the least cartoonish thing in all of Star Wars, basically.
Why do I feel like you're always talking at me and not to me?
You know what? I've already said my thing about like people who, you know, make judgments about, animation.
I tried to watch some of Clone Wars.
No, okay, I know.
I did my best.
I got a whole thought here. It might take longer than it needs to express, but like, you know, I appreciate that. Like, you gave it a shot and you're like, yeah, I just don't enjoy this. Like, that's not what I'm talking about when I say like, look, give it a shot. It's not like it's not all aimed at kids just because it's animated. You don't like animation. That's fine. You know, that's fine. Lee wouldn't watch Clone Wars for a long time because she doesn't like bad animation. And the early seasons are pretty rough. But the later ones are fantastic, I think.
And I'll also say, I mean, we made this point a couple times during Book of Boba Fett. During Bad Batch. And I think the same thing is here. I feel like Star Wars has really finally found the right formula for making reference to things that only a small part of your audience has seen without alienating the larger part of the audience. Because, like, Paul, you and I are getting the Pikes from all that we've seen before.
Right.
Actually, you're not feeling like you have no idea who these Pikes are and it's taking you out of the story, right? They're being reused.
Fish people.
Yeah.
Or, like, when they mentioned the Witches of Dathomir. Like, that didn't necessarily mean anything to you, right? But, like,
I was like,
like that, they said witches.
Gotta look that up later. Yeah. I perked
you'd
up.
Like them.
Yeah, you'd really like them.
I'm gonna look into it tomorrow.
I would love to see them live action somewhere. Hell yeah. I don't know how that would happen, but it'd be great to get them back.
I mean, Ventress could show up in Kenobi.
They're basically dark side force users who aren't Sith and want nothing to do with the Jedi and Sith, but they're all women, and they're for all intents and purposes, witches. That's, yeah, no, it's you.
I wouldn't, yeah, that's exactly, yeah, like, I was telling Ken, I was like, I wouldn't want to be a Jedi. He's like, after the whole, right. like, Jedis could wreck shop thing, I was like, no, because it sucks. I was like, look at it like the Catholic Church, and then that went into a whole conversation of comparisons, which, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into here, but like, yeah, no, it sucks. And he's like, so you'd be a Sith? I was like, no, there's somewhere mm-hmm. right in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's maybe Ahsoka, so stay tuned for that yeah. one. But
definitely.
But like, the Witches of Dathomir, and they're that's the same place that Maul from, you know, the mm-hmm. first movie, the first...
The Darth?
Yeah, Darth Maul.
Darth Maul?
comes from. Like, they're from the same planet, but...
why was he a spider hurt in the Clone Wars thing? Like, I got that far, and I was like, why are you a spider? Because he got cut in half?
Kind of, you know, removed parts of him.
But would you really choose to become a spider?
No, he didn't. Like, somebody did that to him, apparently. I don't think that ever gets totally resolved, but yeah. Yeah, okay. Not a choice.
Never mind. I was going to say, I feel like there's some Star Wars property that talks about him being very unhappy about it, but I realize it's the recent Lego Halloween special, which is brilliant and wonderful.
I mean,
and actually does a great job of explaining, like, how Darth Maul comes to be a spider. I don't think it's canon, but, you know, it's still a lot of fun, so why the heck not?
I will say that Lego seems like the best medium for explaining how you can just, like, click on and click off, like, your lower section of your body. Like, spider legs, exactly. You know?
Exactly. No, I'm a spider. No,
I like it. All right, so anything else from this episode people want to get into?
Oh, I really like that Rancors are just like the pit bulls, like puppy pit bulls of the universe. Yeah. And it breaks my heart what happens to them. Yeah. But I also love this new direction that we're going with them.
I love when Boba Fett is like playing with his new pet. And
it's a Gucci Goopo.
You know, the torture droid who's become his protocol droid comes in to say there's guests. And he's like, eh, whatever. I want to deal with my pet.
I'm busy.
Well, then he goes off. And then Danny Trejo's like, don't worry, he'll be back. I will say that, like, the whole, you know, you have this adorable, you know, gruesome, like, beast, right? But also, like, just giant animal who's adorable. And often they get mistreated. You know, being kept in that pit and then being like, I want to ride him. Like, not exactly liberating, right? Like, it does True. Feel like there's going to be a meaningful relationship there, but not entirely non-problematic. And so, like, for me, as someone who's, you know, very much an animal advocate, like, I really enjoyed the, you know, like, you know, Rancor are emotionally complex creatures. He's depressed. And Boba Fett's like, really? Like, that's a thing? It's like, of course it's a thing. It's got a brain. Yeah. Think about how big the brain is, probably. Like, it's...
Well, he doesn't think that far.
I know, but like, but at the same time, it's like, they're like, oh, feed it, you know, some of the carcasses from the, you know, the larder, and like...
What if it loves carcasses?
No. Well, yeah, but like, what about what was the carcass before it was the carcass, you know? I mean, like...
So animals can
no,
eat
they
animals
can, but I'm saying
cycle?
Like within the context of humans having pets, I think there's just some stuff going on, and like yeah. seeing Ming-Na Wen chewing on some giant big old bone, I was like, all right, I don't know, go shoot someone.
Like, I felt like I watched that and I was like, okay, there's no way Paul's gonna want to talk about this episode, and then later there's the most like pro animal, like, you know, animals are awesome, because yeah, it feels like it's not just saying like. Yeah, it's a big, dumb, stupid animal. You can love it, and it'll eat your enemies. It's saying, yeah, this is an emotionally complex creature. Like, and I like the idea that it imprints on a human. And right. so you maybe could...
It's like Twilight.
Yeah, you can form a bond.
It thinks you're its husband now.
Right. It can form a bond where it feels like, you know, where maybe I can... I think the idea is that you can tell a story in which it's not... This is what the Rancor might want, right. theoretically. Who knows? But instead of it just being an imprisoned pet... But yeah, but, you know, it's not going to be perfect, to be sure. But I like that they're going so much more into, like, what does the Rancor actually want? What does it care about? And Danny Trejo clearly loves this animal.
Right.
And wants him to love it as well.
Exactly. And I feel like watching Return of the Jedi will never be the same. Although, I think when we did Return of the Jedi, I think I even mentioned, like, you know, like, this poor Rancor. Like,
yeah,
you know, and
the
Rancor
moment.
Trainer or whatever was like,
I know.
That's like right up there with the Ewok over the other Ewok. Yeah. Those are the two saddest
moments. It all makes sense now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. There's one other thing I was going to say. Oh, I don't know if any of you felt this, and it wouldn't have made sense because obviously it would have to be a time jump, but you had this moment of, like, Boba Fett saying, I want to ride a Rancor. And then we cut to, you know, he goes to see the mayor, and you see everyone arriving first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, clearly, like, this entourage for Boba Fett to show up. There was a small part of me that thought he was going to show up riding a Rancor. Oh. I was like, I don't get how it happened so
fast.
We
weren't there yet. It's going to happen soon, but we were not
there.
Yeah,
that's like final episode kind of thing, I think. Or like, you know, final battle scene and then, you know, whatever. But
Chekhov's Rancor.
That would have been a little quick.
Yeah.
Move to bite.
Right.
Dude's still depressed.
Yeah.
Can't go take you into town. Sad. Still a sad Rancor.
My little thing I got to comment on is I thought it was also really nice seeing him riding the Banthas. I don't understand how a creature that furry lives in the desert. Like,
I don't know why you would ride a Bantha anywhere. It looked like they don't go fast and it took him forever. That's why all his friends got killed, because he took a Bantha to town.
I mean, I'm not sure he could walk that much faster. I mean, I guess if you're like running like They're Lord like, of the Rings, Two Towers style or something, but like,
mm-hmm.
I don't
it's
know.
Desert. It's hard to run in.
True.
But,
yeah.
I just don't get how those creatures.
Yeah, then you don't get sand in your boots. That's why you ride a Bantha, I guess.
I'm with Paul, though. I don't want to see another dead Bantha for the entire rest of the show.
Yeah.
Like, I've had my fill.
I'm fine with that.
You guys just keep killing them.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the Banthas have that.
Why would you even kill a Bantha? They don't do anything. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
anyway,
I think it is supposed to be an analog to, like, killing the buffalo, you know?
Very much
back in the day.
Yeah.
The whole, like, shooting from the train.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, come on.
All right, well, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up.
I'm good.
Mr. Zen Madman, where is the Madman being Zen?
I guess on Twitter recently. I don't know. That might stop soon, but I have actually
been
tweeting.
Unless you want spoilers.
Yeah. I'll start making tags or something. I don't know, whatever, we'll see. Twitter's, it's the land of spoilers. You know, tread at your own risk. That's about it. One last thing I did want to mention was, last time you asked whether the litter, like having, you know, people carrying it was a flex. And I think like 100% a flex. I think riding in on a Rancor also would be a flex that, you know, is on the same level. So, yeah.
Fair. Ashley, what about yourself? Where can we find you?
Here, MCU cast, or, you know, Stranded Panda stuff.
There you go.
Nothing, you know, just the MCU cast pretty much.
There
right
you
now.
Go. There you go. Of course, you can find all my podcasting at theethicalpanda.com. There you'll find all about this podcast, about the superhero ethics podcast, one that both Paul and Ashley are frequently on. We wrapped up our coverage of The Witcher recently, and Paul and I have now started doing coverage of some of the Batman movies as we get ready for the Robert Pattinson. Ashley and I are soon going to be doing an episode on
what?
Jaws.
Excuse
That's gonna be a lot
me,
of fun.
What? Where was my invitation to that? How dare thee continue?
We're going to be talking Jaws pretty soon. With Ashley, actually, do you want to give a quick preview for the... Because this is all you setting this up.
I met at PAX some friends of a friend of mine who run a cast called the Cast Die Podcast, which are pretty much one-shot D&D games. And it's all from like voiceover actors. Oh, cool. So you can really follow the story. It's a lot of fun. And he was like, my friend who does the voice work for Unsolved Mysteries really loves Jaws. And I was like, I love Jaws. So let's talk about it. Because there's just a lot to talk about. It's the first summer blockbuster in history. And it really, you know, it brought a different kind of fear to people that has lasted, what, 50 years, 60 years? I can't remember. Yeah, it's quite a movie. So we're going to talk about that. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
No, I think, and we're going to get really into this kind of the filmmaking stuff and some issues that superhero ethics doesn't often cover. But we'll also be talking about a movie that, you know, is about, among other things, business leaders not wanting to deal with a natural disaster that's happening. A story with absolutely no relevance today, but maybe some, like, you know, interesting ethical questions I can raise. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And what do you all think? Would love to hear what you think of Boba Fett. Let us know. You can go to theethicalpanda.com, find our Facebook, our Twitter, our email. Write into us. Let us know what you think. Are you loving this part of Boba Fett? Are you not loving it? The motorcycle chase? What's your feel? I'm going to have myself, Paul, Ashley. Thank you all so much for listening, and have a great day.
I'm waiting for Paul.
Oh, am I supposed to say something?
I'm Batman.
I kind of tune out in the outro. Yeah, I'm Batman.